Chapter 22. Stepped into the ante room, jingling his spurs. Come, my dear. You don't mean to say he has not been home since 6 o'clock this morning? Saying these words, Lute Dubert opened without ceremony the door of a room so comfortably and neatly ordered that only from internal evidence in the shape of boots, uniforms, and military accoutrements did he acquire the conviction that it was Lute Ferrod's room. And he saw also that Lute Ferrod was not at home. The truthful maid had followed him, and raised her candid eyes to his face. H'M, said Lute Dubert, greatly disappointed, for he had already visited all the haunts where a lieutenant of hussars could be found of a fine afternoon. So he's out? And do you happen to know, my dear, why he went out at 6 this morning? No, she answered, readily. He came home late last night, and snored. I heard him when I got up at 5. Then he dressed himself in his oldest uniform and went out. Service, I suppose. Service? Not a bit of it, cried Lute Dubert. Learn, my angel, that he went out thus early to fight a duel with a civilian. She heard this news without a quiver of her dark eyelashes. It was very obvious that the actions of Lute Ferrod were generally above criticism. She only looked up for a moment in mute surprise, and Lute Dubert concluded from this absence of emotion that she must have seen Lute Ferrod since the morning. He looked around the room. Come, he insisted, with confidential familiarity. He's perhaps somewhere in the house now? She shook her head. So much the worse for him, continued Lute Dubert, in a tone of anxious conviction. B-Buddy has been home this morning. This time the pretty maid nodded slightly. He has, cried Lute Dubert, and went out again? What for? Couldn't he keep quietly indoors? What a lunatic. My dear girl, Lute Dubert's natural kindness of disposition and strong sense of comradeship helped his powers of observation. He changed his tone to a most insinuating softness, and, gazing at the hussar's breeches hanging over the arm of the girl, he appealed to the interest she took in Lute Ferrod's comfort and happiness. He was pressing and persuasive. He used his eyes, which were kind and fine, with excellent effect. His anxiety to get hold at once of Lute Ferrod, for Lute Ferrod's own good, seemed so genuine that at last it overcame the girl's unwillingness to speak. Unluckily, as he had not much to tell, Lute Ferrod had returned home shortly before 10, had walked straight into his room, and had thrown himself on his bed to resume his slumbers. As he had heard him snore rather louder than before far into the afternoon. Then he got up, put on his best uniform, and went out. That was all she knew. She raised her eyes, and Lute Dubert stared into them incredulously. It's incredible. Gone parading the town in his best uniform. My dear child, don't you know he ran that civilian through this morning? Clean through, as you spit a hair. The pretty maid heard the gruesome intelligence without any signs of distress. But she pressed her lips together thoughtfully. He isn't parading the town, she remarked in a low tone. Far from it. The civilian's family is making an awful row, continued Lute Dubert, pursuing his train of thought. And the general is very angry. It's one of the best families in the town. Ferrod ought to have kept close at least. What will the general do to him? Inquired the girl, anxiously. He won't have his head cut off, to be sure, grumbled Lute Dubert. His conduct is positively indecent. He's making no end of trouble for himself by this sort of bravado. But he isn't parading the town, the maid insisted in a shy murmur. Why, yes. Now I think of it, I haven't seen him anywhere about. What on earth has he done with himself? He's gone to pay a call, suggested the maid, after a moment of silence. Lute Dubert started. A call? Do you mean a call on a lady? The cheek of the man. And how do you know this, my dear? Without concealing her woman's scorn for the denseness of the masculine mind, the pretty maid reminded him that Lute Ferrod arrayed himself in his best uniform before going out. He had also put on his newest dolman, she added, in a tone, as if this conversation were getting on her nerves, and turned away brusquely. Lute Dubert, without questioning the accuracy of the deduction, did not see that it advanced him much on his official quest. For his quest after Lute Ferrod had an official character. He did not know any of the women this fellow, who had run a man through in the morning, was likely to visit in the afternoon. The two young men knew each other but slightly. He bit his gloved finger in perplexity. Call, he exclaimed. Call on the devil. The girl, with her back to him, and folding the hussar's breeches on a chair, protested with a vexed little laugh. Oh, dear, no. On Madame de Lion. Lute. Dubert whistled softly. Madame de Lion was the wife of a high official who had a well-known salon, and some pretensions to sensibility and elegance. The husband was a civilian, and old, but the society of the salon was young and military. Lute. Dubert had whistled, not because the idea of pursuing Lute Ferrod into that very salon was disagreeable to him, but because, having arrived in Strasbourg only lately, he had not had the time as yet to get an introduction to Madame de Lion. And what was that swashbuckler Ferrod doing there, he wondered. He did not seem the sort of man who, are you certain of what you say? Asked Lute Dubert. The girl was perfectly certain. Without turning round to look at him, she explained that the coachman of their next-door neighbors knew the maitre d'hotel of Madame de Lion. In this way as he had her information. And she was perfectly certain. In giving this assurance she sighed. Lute Ferrod called there nearly every afternoon, she added. Ah, bah! Exclaimed Dubert, ironically. His opinion of Madame de Lion went down several degrees. Lute Ferrod did not seem to him specially worthy of attention on the part of a woman with a reputation for sensibility and elegance. But there was no saying. At bottom they were all alike very practical rather than idealistic. Lute Dubert, however, did not allow his mind to dwell on these considerations. By thunder, he reflected aloud. The general goes there sometimes. If he happens to find the fellow making eyes at the lady, there will be the devil to pay. Our general is not a very accommodating person, I can tell you. Go quickly, then. Don't stand here now, I've told you where he is, cried the girl, coloring to the eyes. Thanks, my dear. I don't know what I would have done without you. After manifesting his gratitude in an aggressive way, which at first was repulsed violently, and then submitted to with a sudden, and still more repellent indifference, Lute Dubert took his departure. He clanked and jingled along the streets with a martial swagger. To run a comrade to earth in the drawing room, where he was not known, did not trouble him in the least. A uniform is a passport. His position as officier d'ordonnance of the general added to his assurance. Moreover, now that he knew where to find Lute Ferrod, he had no option. It was a service matter. Madame de Lion's house had an excellent appearance. A man in livery, opening the door of a large drawing room with a waxed floor, shouted his name and stood aside to let him pass. It was a reception day. The ladies wore big hats surcharged with a profusion of feathers, their bodies sheathed in clinging white gowns, from the armpits to the tips of the low satin shoes, looked sylph-like and cool in a great display of bare necks and arms. The men who talked with them, on the contrary, were arrayed heavily in multicolored garments with collars up to their ears, and thick sashes round their waists. Lute Dubert made his unabashed way across the room, and, bowing low before a sylph-like form reclining on a couch, offered his apologies for this intrusion, which nothing could excuse, but the extreme urgency of the service order he had to communicate to his comrade Ferrod. He proposed to himself to return presently in a more regular manner, and beg forgiveness for interrupting the interesting conversation. A bare arm was extended towards him with gracious nonchalance, even before he had finished speaking. He pressed the hand respectfully to his lips, and made the mental remark that it was bony. Madame de Lion was a blonde, with too fine a skin and a long face. "Qu'est-ce cirque?" she said, with an ethereal smile, disclosing a set of large teeth. "See, come this evening, to plead for your forgiveness. I will not fail, madam. Meantime, lute." Ferrod, splendid in his new dolman and the extremely polished boots of his calling, sat on a chair within a foot of the couch, one hand resting on his thigh, the other twirling his mustache to a point. At a significant glance from Dubert, he rose without alacrity, and followed him into the recess of a window. "What is it you want with me?" he asked, with astonishing indifference. "Lute." Dubert could not imagine that in the innocence of his heart and simplicity of his conscience lute. Ferrod took a view of his duel in which neither remorse, nor yet a rational apprehension of consequences had any place. Though he had no clear recollection how the quarrel had originated, it was begun in an establishment where beer and wine are drunk late at night. He had not the slightest doubt of being himself the outraged party. He had had two experienced friends for his seconds. Everything had been done according to the rules governing that sort of adventures. And a duel is obviously fought for the purpose of someone being at least hurt, if not killed outright. The civilian got hurt. That also was in order. Lute. Ferrod was perfectly tranquil, but lute. Dubert took it for affectation, and spoke with a certain vivacity. "I am directed by the general to give you the order to go at once to your quarters, and remain there under close arrest." It was now the turn of lute. Ferrod to be astonished. "What the devil are you telling me there?" he murmured, faintly, and fell into such profound wonder that he could only follow mechanically the motions of lute. Dubert. The two officers, one tall, with an interesting face and a mustache the color of ripe corn, the other, short and sturdy, with a hooked nose and a thick crop of black curly hair, approached the mistress of the house to take their leave. Madame de Lion, a woman of eclectic taste, smiled upon these armed young men with impartial sensibility and an equal share of interest. Madame de Lion took her delight in the infinite variety of the human species. All the other eyes in the drawing room followed the departing officers, and when they had gone out, one or two men, who had already heard of the duel, imparted the information to the sylph-like ladies, who received it with faint shrieks of humane concern. Meantime, the two hussars walked side by side, lute. Ferrod trying to master the hidden reason of things which in this instance eluded the grasp of his intellect, lute. Dubert feeling annoyed at the part he had to play, because the general's instructions were that he should see personally that lute. Ferrod carried out his orders to the letter, and at once. "The chief seems to know this animal," he thought, eyeing his companion, whose round face, the round eyes, and even the twisted up jet-black little mustache seemed animated by a mental exasperation against the incomprehensible. And aloud he observed rather reproachfully, "The general is in a devilish fury with you, lute." Ferrod stopped short on the edge of the pavement, and cried in accents of unmistakable sincerity, "What on earth for?" The innocence of the fiery Gascon soul was depicted in the manner in which he seized his head in both hands, as if to prevent it bursting with perplexity. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.